Do not adjust your radio dial. You are tuned in to the Mark Order Podcast. Join the Mark Order.
Hello, hello. It is Wednesday night, so you know what that means. A hard cut by Ryan. Because Ryan is running the show tonight. It is Ryan, joined by my co-host, Joe. We are the Mark Order Podcast. We are not joined by Kate tonight. I think she put out there that for health reasons, she had to stop doing her Monday show and this show for a little while, not permanently. Hopefully, she starts feeling a little better and we get her back. But I am joined, as I said earlier, by my co-host, Joe. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm good, Ryan. How are you? Feels like it's been more than a week or so since we've done this.
2 weeks. We missed 2 weeks in a row.
Oh, gosh.
As I, you know, we said before missing some time, with Kate needing to take time away from multiple commitments, Joe has some stuff. I had some stuff. I was traveling, which I did forget would keep me from doing the show, and other stuff. We just, for a little while, it's going to be a little hit or miss, but when we're both free, we're going to do it. Or if one of us is free and you grab a co-host, we'll do it. But it's just tough right now. Papa Squat, which is Tony from The Shining Wizards, which I will plug in a second, missed it. Is COVID Kate sick again? I'm not getting into what COVID Kate has, though that isn't a terrible nickname for her. But yes, she did have to step back for a little while from her Monday show she does with Alex on Fightful Select and ours, which is fair. We're a free show, so I can't really complain to her that she doesn't do us, because even though she gets no pay from us, so I think that's fair. But it's not a permanent thing. I will go reiterate that she will be back when she's feeling better. So we'll be hit or miss for a little while we deal with some schedules, but we'll be better. So how are you doing, Joe?
You know, I'm doing great now that the NBA season has kicked off, the Knicks won. I can move on to worrying about basketball season instead of football season. So, yeah.
Well, that's good. I mean, and Tony, we will reach out if we need someone. Again, our schedules got confused anyway. Literally, as I was driving down to where I was going, I realized, I won't be back till late Wednesday night, like after we'd start the show.
And all know Tony is a big AEW honk.
Loves it. Favorite show. Basketball season did start. Sixers got a win tonight. They're a young rookie showing a lot of promise. I'm going to put all my eggs in the rookie basket after one game, because that's the proper way to be a fan. I am still cheering football season, but Eagles need to sort some stuff out. I think the Eagles offensive coordinator needs to sort some stuff out. He's not the best. So actually, Tony giving us a good segue. This past Saturday was Wrestle Dream, which was overall a really good show, a lot of good wrestling. Fortunately, the spot coming out that everyone's talking about is the fish tank spot with Darby and Mox. I know people reacted to it in the time, but it mainly caught a lot of traction because former AEW producer Sarah Stock tweeted essentially, what about kids seeing this? And then people responded like, this happened at like midnight on Saturday. It's okay. So I don't agree. Like, she went down a weird path that I can't even get into. She, like I said, she went weird. And before we keep going, I'll say hi to our chat. Pieces. Hi, Pieces. Hi, Scott. Hi, Eric. Hi, Trey Sammons. Scott trying to say Eagles players are saying it's the players, not the coordinator. That's just because they're loyal and they're good. That is good players not throwing their coach under a bus. But looking at the way he calls games, I got to believe that's the coordinator. But yeah, I can't really talk to Sarah Stock and where she went. His pieces said it. She just mentally imploded from there. She got some pushback and did not handle it well. But the spot, how do I want to say this? I don't love the spot personally. It's just not a spot I enjoy. I'm not a wrestling fan who need, like, I struggle with death matches. I struggle with street fights. I struggle with anytime there's like real injury occurring. And I know he's not actually, but that just seems like a risky situation to me to, like, you know, put in. But at the same point, I'm not worried about the children. It's the same argument for all of this. Like, it's midnight on a pay-per-view. If your kids are of the age where they're going to try to mimic this, they probably shouldn't be awake to see it. And maybe you as a parent should step in and be like, hey, don't do this.
Yeah, I just don't think it's, of the other things that we've seen in professional wrestling, and, you know, it's suspend your belief. They do a lot of things that you legally shouldn't do. How many weeks do they assault people and try to run people over, or come and try to light people on fire or electrocute them, or put a bag over someone's head to suffocate them, or stadium stampede when, you know, I can't remember if it was Santana Ortiz was drowning Matt Hardy, but it was funny because Matt Hardy was doing his broken gimmick.
Yeah.
I mean, it's little things that they are violent, and it is kind of a PG-13 television show where, to your point, you have to kind of understand that it's a movie, it's an act. And if your kids don't, then you kind of have to find a way to explain that to them if you're watching the show with them. But
yeah, I agree. And again, that's not me disliking all stuff. Like, I did find the broken man hot for whatever reason. I understand, and maybe I'm just squeamish on stuff. The dunking in the pool, I guess because it was a pool, just felt different than like shoving your head in a fish tank. But I don't think of it as the end of the world. I don't think of it the end of pro wrestling. I don't think that's something kids can't see. I mean, listen, I was a kid watching wrestling at the time that there was Inferno matches and Buried Alive matches, and I never tried to bury my friends alive. I never tried to light them on fire.
But did you try to hook up a car battery to your genitals?
That had nothing to do with wrestling. Oh. That was just the way life is. But I can't. I can't support. Not say I can't support that. No. I can't support an argument that goes like, "What of the children?" Like, again, man. AEW has never pretended it's the most family friendly product. It doesn't shy away from kids, but it's the most violent. Pieces has a good point, but we're not going to acknowledge it. Big G pointing out that they would have done blood and stuff if it wasn't for the athletic commission. Absolutely, which is stupid that wrestling has an athletic commission, but that's a whole different discussion. It's be a parent. Tell your kids, hey, you know, your kid doesn't deserve. No, your kid doesn't. Your kid shouldn't learn from TV that you don't like more than they learn from you, I guess. Like, step in and say, you know, when I first started liking wrestling, when I was, I mean, very like, actually not first. That's not true. When I first, yeah, oh, we're gonna do a timeline. I don't know if you were like me, like you liked it when you were like really young, but you didn't really watch it. You just kind of liked Hulk Hogan, and you liked like. And then I stopped watching, and then around 10, I started watching it. So when I first started liking it, when I was like 4 or 5, before I stopped, my dad did say to me, like, hey, you know, you can't slam your friend's head into the ground or into it something. And I was, you know, he went out of his way to, sorry, I'm bleeding for some reason. He went out of his way to point that out, that, like, you know, you can't do this thing. So maybe as a parent, you just tell your kids, don't do this. And guess what? I never did any of that stuff. Don't get me wrong. When I got older, we tried stupid wrestling tricks, but we knew we shouldn't be doing it. Like, it wasn't a, because they did it, we were influenced. It's, you know, why am I bleeding? Sorry, I didn't. It wasn't that, like, a lot of it, but I could feel it rolling down my leg, and that was distracting. Sorry, guys. I literally don't mean to be that distracted. I got some of it on my hand from like scratching my leg.
Thinking the children, Ryan. Come on.
And then she went really off, and I'm not going to get into some of the stuff she said, but she really took like a left turn on some of the stuff she went down. So I'm like, you know what? If your argument is it's not for me, I don't like the spot. It's not my favorite spot. And that's not because the image of a guy's head being in a fish tank like that, I guess, like, maybe that's what it accomplished. In my head, I kept thinking, like, how's he not accidentally slurping that water? Like, it's just... But saying a spot isn't for me versus saying like this is a bad spot in wrestling because of the children, it's just not the same. I don't know. That's just my humble opinion. Otherwise, Wrestle Dream was, I think universally people accepted it, was a very good pay-per-view. AEW delivers on its pay-per-views. Listen, both companies do. When you have the level of talent that these companies have, so long as you don't mess up the endings of matches, you tend to nail the pay-per-view because the people put on awesome, awesome matches. Like, that's, you can't be this skilled and not have a good pay-per-view. So, well, you know, overall, I don't think there was any other news this week. We're not going to do a full Wrestle Dream rundown. I'm sure you guys have gotten it from people better. But I don't think there's any other wrestling news this week.
Were there any surprises from Wrestle Dream, I guess? I mean, you don't have to deep dive into every match, but were there an outcome that surprised you?
That's a good question. Not really. I think it was fairly predictable. I thought the Demand versus the Hurt Syndicate would go differently. Not that I thought the Demand would necessarily come out on top or anything, but I don't know why. I just had a different feel for that match. I'm literally having to go back and now look at some, make sure that none of these, I'm not like, yeah, no, that's the only one I would think that I thought, but that's the only one that I believed might go differently. Again, I still would have saw the Hurt Syndicate winning, but I thought there might be a new person introduced on the Hurt Syndicate. That's where I think I was different. You didn't get that. Because clearly they're not done with the Demand, so I thought maybe that was the way to extend it without that was a way to extend it without making it feel like you're just seeing the same stuff over and over again. Mm-hmm. Pieces saying a lot of people thought Tekla was going to win. Jamie Hayter, they're clearly in the stage that they knew how big she was when before she got hurt, and they're going to stick with it. There's one match, the Harley Cameron and Willow versus Megan Bain, Penelope Ford. I think going into it, I would have thought Megan Bain and Ford might win. Now seeing the women's bracket, which we'll talk about later, I would have changed that knowing the women's bracket and said Cameron and Nightingale, because I have thoughts there that we'll get to when we get to that. So no, there wasn't. Was there anything for you?
No, not really. I thought, no, Takeshka and Okada would lose because they couldn't get along or something like that. But it's just so odd that to have, you know, Bandito pinning Okada, kind of like Scott George saying, I get why they did it or how they did it or why they did it. But it still kind of surprises me. But it further propels Bandito as like a top level player now.
Yeah, it propels Bandito. It also is, we're not going to remember, I hate to say, in some ways it's going to propel Bandito, in some ways we're not going to remember that Bandito pinned Okada, because realistically it's Okada and Takeshita that's the story of, like, that's why it doesn't even register to me. It's like whatever happened in that match, they're building to Takeshita Okada, and that was just in service of that. So I never expected them to win. I always expected it. And honestly, Bandido pinning either Takeshita or Okada would have been like, oh my God. So it makes sense it was Okada. And I'm not saying Scott's wrong for being surprised, because absolutely, I mean, Okada's Okada and Bandido to pin him. But it's a little bit of the story of like, hey, Okada, you took the pin. The old man took the pin, not the young gun. So there's that. And Bandido is absolutely up there for wrestler of the year. Just without question, just been killing it. Big G did have one piece of news that came out this week. And honestly, I didn't remember it was this week. I might have thought it was last week. Andrade situation is just weird. He has like a year long non-compete, which just doesn't make sense to me. But AEW didn't realize that. And in fairness to them, it's not like they were trying to violate it. They thought that he was clear. Everyone thought he was clear except WWE legal. So they showed up. That's why he hasn't been back on. I cannot see a year long non-compete holding up if he fights it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's very difficult to argue that your people are independent contractors and hold someone to a year long non-compete.
I'm trying to think if they even have a recent precedent for it. Like if there's anyone that I can't, I mean, it's usually 90 days, right?
Well, that's just it. Most wrestlers who either quit or let go have 90 days. So they don't fight that. They're paid through the 90. Part of it is too, though, they're paid through those 90. So they're not really, it's not really a 90 day non-compete. It's a 90 days to the end of your contract.
Right.
Yeah. Because you're paid. A non-compete where you're not getting paid.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's going to be very difficult for, I don't think that holds up. I think WWE would probably take a win of 90 days and like settling it, being like, you do the typical 90 and we'll wipe it free. Because I don't know how you can justify that your people are independent contractors and say, but we're not going to let them wrestle for a year. It just, I mean, I know Samantha, what's her name? Ricochet's
Irvin?
The former announcer.
Samantha Irvin.
Thank you. I could not think of Irvin. She had a 2-year non-compete. But she also doesn't seem like she's pressing hers. So, like, the whole thing is, I think if fought in court, it falls apart. I don't think she's willing to go to court for it because.
But doesn't this whole, like, year-long non-compete thing, like, this whole thing, just, like, it's the most Andrade thing that could happen to him. As far as like momentum and then a screeching halt of momentum.
Yeah, like he came in hot and people were excited and
that's I feel like his I feel like that's his career.
Yeah. I'd love to know why he like I know this is gonna sound Pieces had a good point. She was an actual employee. It's still too long in my opinion for a non-compete, but if you're an actual employee, your contract situation is a little different. Like
love to know. There are different reasons when you fire someone with cause versus not renewing their contract.
Yeah, I'm curious why Andrade was fired. Like, do we ever find out why he was fired?
They're just speculation. I don't know if anything actually came out.
Yeah, like I would love to know because that also depends on it too. Like I'm not saying I would agree with a year long anyway. I think, if you're an independent contractor, a year long just doesn't make sense to me. But I would like to know, like, do they have a reason to hold this over him for besides just the way they do that? I see a wellness violation wouldn't justify to me.
Hopefully
a year long hold.
Hopefully, you like come to a compromise, like even 4 months.
Yeah. I John Alba said it was multiple wellness violations. I mean, but that
still.
Yeah, I don't. I don't get it. I like. You're an independent contractor. Go, like. I don't know. I guess maybe I'm just. And what was he busted for? Like, all that stuff matters because they're very weird. Like, I don't know. I'm not even going to get it. Like, we're going to have to stop there because we just don't know enough. But that was. That's a weird one. And we're going to have to see how that plays out. Because, again, a year long non-compete for an independent contractor is just absurd. Mind you, part of that is like independent contractors don't get any of the benefits of being a full-time employee when they're let go or something. Like, there's nothing there for them. So, like, you know, I don't know. Sorry, I'm still distracted by randomly bleeding. I keep having to look down to see if I'm bleeding. So, all right, well, that was our very short conversation on the news in Wrestle Dream. I don't understand the injury. Well, again, I don't understand the shock and all of, oh, the children over the head in the fish tank. And I don't understand the Andrade situation at all. When we find out more information, but my stance is going to be pretty clear of if you're an independent contractor, a year-long suspension, a year-long non-compete is just absurd. I think it's absurd even if you're not an independent contractor, but it just doesn't make sense to me. No, I don't know.
Okay, so we talked about the things you don't understand. What about the things you do understand?
I don't understand a lot. See, that's the problem.
That makes sense for a person who does a history pod.
Well, I mean, you don't have to understand it. You just have to report it. Well, there's no other news for me to say, like, I understand this news. What I do understand is that we had a Dynamite tonight.
We did.
In
San Antonio?
From San Antonio.
It threw me off that the hard cam was by the stage. By the ramp.
Yeah, but I liked it. I like a different feel every now and again, and not always. Like, I prefer the traditional camera view, but a little split up isn't always bad. I think uniqueness makes things feel fun. Crowd was awesome. Before we get into it, obviously, Scott saying he can wrestle in CMLL, he'll be fine. I'm not saying he won't be fine or that he can't make a living. It just sucks. Like, they say you're an independent contractor, and then they're like, oh, but by the way, you can't go anywhere for a year. What? At least through the 90-day non-compete, they're paying you. But anyway, before we get into Dynamite, please check out all the shows on the Shining Wizards Network. We are a part of that. There's a lot of great shows on there, so please check them out. Since this is our first time back in 2 weeks, we're going to skip the commercial and go right in to keep the pace going.
You know what? I'm curious for our friends in the chat, I'm just interested to see what other shows they listen to on the Shining Wizards podcast or network.
I'm thinking.
So if you're in the chat, just type in like what other shows you listen to on the Shining Wizards network. And I'm just curious.
Yeah, works for me. So while they do that, we will start our Dynamite review live from San Antonio. It starts with a clip of Hangman Adam Page in the trainer's room, I guess immediately following his match at WrestleDream. And he's losing his mind because at WrestleDream, Samoa Joe and the rest of the ops turned heel and they basically attacked Hangman after the match. And he is PO'd about it. If I had notes, my notes would have read Hangy Angry. And I would have said Hangy, H-A-N-G-Y. Because he was angry. Big G's shout out the Year of Duke and Rogue. Great show. He was angry. Hopefully so. I mean, you got attacked after a match, and he was pretty fair with Samoa Joe leading up to it all. He was never taking shots at him. He was never, you know, I'm liking the heel turn for the ops. I think it's a much needed spice up of their characters, all three of them. But hanging angry.
Shibata as a heel to me is weird.
It is, but because he doesn't really talk and he's just like a silent wrestler, I think there's a way to do it. Like, he'll play off well as like the silent killer.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think if done well, that's a very fun character. It could also be done very poorly. So, mind you, we'll see how it plays out. But Him just not saying anything but beating people up is always fun. Big G shouting out Duke and Rogue because they go back and they watch old wrestling, which is true, and Big G appreciates that. That is a lot of fun. I do actually, that's a lot of my most fun podcasts are the ones that go back and talk, even stuff I've heard before, because, and honestly, I like hearing about pay-per-views and wrestling I didn't watch at the time. Mm-hmm. Because it's like, oh, I'm learning. Scott has a good point, though. There are a lot of heel factions.
But that makes sense, though, to me, because I feel like heels are the kind of people who would want to have a numbers advantage and try to pick on people.
Yes, so that I agree with you there, but I also always thought to myself, but wouldn't the good guys have friends?
They do, but they also, like, have an honor code of letting their friends fight their battles if they want to fight their own battles. And not interfering.
That's fair. I'm, you know, they're.
Don't make me try to make sense out of old wrestling tropes. I don't know.
I need you to make sense out of old wrestling tropes. And then Big G also shouted out Turnbuckle Throwback. So I'll shout that out. Another throwback. The throwbacks are always fun. They're. For better or worse, and you can actually see some of how things we've had have played throughout the years. You know, how some tropes, like so many heel factions, have existed for longer than we thought. So we start the night with the newly heel ops defending their titles against the Hurt Syndicate, which is Bobby Lashley, MVP, and Shelton Benjamin, in what was a fairly back and forth match. However, there was a bit of a, how do I want to say this, tomfoolery. You saw MVP looking like he was going to win this all for the Hurt Syndicate when Ricochet ran in and interfered. So that allowed Samoa Joe to lock in the Coquina clutch and win the match. There's two things here. I'm not complaining about the match at all. The match I thought was very good. Two highly talented teams. There was a moment in there where there was like a Hobbs and Bobby Lashley show off to start, and I think we were getting beef chants or meat, one of the two. I think it was meat. And Joe came in and like covered Hobbs' chest up and like pushed him back. I just thought that was very funny. My only issues here are twofold. One, I don't love that we're continuing the demand versus the Hurt Syndicate story. It's like Hurt Syndicate has literally beat them in almost every way they can, except there was one way they didn't beat them. And that was in a straight up 3-on-3 in which MVP was a straight up wrestler. And my problem with that is MVP has come out and been like, in a straight up wrestling match at my age, even though he's like 2 years older than the other two, but at my age, I can't be a straight up wrestler. So why would you then put them in the trios where he's a straight up wrestler? It just doesn't make sense. Now, Pieces is asking how long before Hurt Syndicate realizes that MVP is the source of their losses. I think they're going to realize it soon, but I don't think it's going to be a turn on MVP. I think MVP brings someone in. I think this is, they've referenced the fourth too much for me to not see a fourth come in. So they're going to bring someone in so that he doesn't have to wrestle. But it just bothers me that they put him in a title match where it's like, it's been established that he is not straight up wrestler going to win a match. It has to be a street fight for him to win. So what do you think? Do you agree with my assessment? What do you think?
I do. When I saw Ricochet interfere, I thought we were done with the demand. But if it's a vehicle to get a new member for the Hurt Syndicate, then I understand why they did it. The match itself tonight, love the fact that they opened up Dynamite with this fight between the two factions. I like the fact that that Samoa Joe is such a heel that he won't give the people what they want with Bobby Lashley and Hobbs right away, and he takes on Lashley himself, which most of the time the leader of a faction wouldn't do. He'd be the one that would start the match and tag out quickly. So yeah, I like that part. I like Heel Samoa Joe. We can talk a little bit about the promo afterwards. I didn't love that as much. I thought that was pretty bland for him. But I don't know if you want to talk a little bit more about the after-match promo.
I mean, you could swear. I mean, it was a fairly bland heel promo from Joe. I felt, I agree with you. Like,
I'm like, you did the whole like fat women and you put down the local sports teams. I'm like, Samoa Joe is better than that to me. Like,
I will only say, normally, my issue is a pretty stereotypical heel thing. Making fun of the big women of San Antonio is just funny because of Charles Barkley. That's did you know that's like a thing he said once?
Sure, but that's a deep cut then.
I did the deep cut, I know. So that's why I found it funny. Like, that's a thing he said and got a lot of attention for.
If he said, like, you know, Hobbs going to see Lars Marge in the basement of the Alamo.
That's a great cut.
Yeah, that would have been great.
Yeah, but I mean, I think both could have worked. I don't know. I my problem was it was a very stereotypical, like, heel promo of, like,
an MJF promo.
Yeah, and that's where, like, I didn't need it. Like, I think he would have been better off not explaining, just being like, we're sick of you guys not taking us, like, we felt like people weren't taking us seriously, you're going to take us seriously now. Like, something like that. Like, I don't know. It would have been easy, like, quick 15 seconds, move on. And not that Joe's a great promo, just...
I mean, his whole message was, if you're a champion, I'm coming after you. Heyman was the first one, and I'm not done with you yet. But put all the other champions on alert that we're coming after you. I mean, that's pretty much the message.
Yeah. That's... So then we move on from that. We have Mercedes Moné arrive with her car full of the boys and the belts. We have Renee interview Statlander, who actually, I think, really, this is one of her better promos. I was actually very, where she said, like, if she could have, in reference to Toni Storm, if she could have stripped, cuddled with, and beat the shit out of anyone, and then made up with anyone, she's glad it was Toni Storm. But she doesn't need a celebration. And she does this thing where, like, she walks around Renee in this weird way. But I really appreciate it. It was like a little bit of spice that Statlander didn't always get to deliver. And then she says she's going to accept Monet's challenge to wrestle. So, you know, that's good. I mean, any thoughts on it? Or
no, I agree with you. I think I noted that it was her best promo, one of her best promos, in my opinion, that I've seen her do. I think she found her voice with the various iterations of her character over the years, from, you know, being an alien, from being a very disgruntled heel, to now kind of finding that snarky, sarcastic tone that she has now. Like, she can be playful, but also can be very cutting. I think she just found her sweet spot.
Yeah. It just so happens that her sweet spot has allowed her to become champ, so that works.
I'm going to try to figure a way to make a sweet spot into a segue into a cake reference, but...
Oh, we'll get to the cake, because if we're going to talk about segments that we got to have some issues with, think about the children. The cake spot's a big one. Then we go to commercial, we come back to Darby Allin.
Unnecessary in-ring promo.
Yeah. He basically is like, I would die for the company and I do things no one else will do, and he never quit and he won't quit, but he knows that the Death Riders aren't gone. But so long as the Death Riders are breathing, there's Darby Allin. The theme of tonight to me was a little bit of, we're not done with anything we went into Wrestle Dream with. All of it carries on beyond. Am I wrong?
You are correct. I like pieces. This could have been an email. That was a promo, yeah.
Yeah. It could have been backstage. A quick backstage vignette that solves that. Like, honestly, it would have worked better as an after match statement. Like they would, like, because it kind of had that feel to it. I don't know. Just I just wish Darby was done with the Death Riders, because, like, what else do you do?
Well, he won't be done until he breaks them, right? So,
yeah, but that just doesn't feel logical at this point. Then we get the Jurassic Express cut a promo, which I actually did appreciate this one, in which Jack Perry's like, hey, we're looking to get back everything we lost. The name, the reputation, giving their all. And then they take the big one, the AEW World Tag Team Championship. It's not like the greatest promo or anything, but what I like is it kind of establishes that, like, them getting back together wasn't a one-off for the Bucks. They held the belts at one point. They want the belts again. Like, I like that. Like, a team coming out and saying, we're staying. We're this isn't a one-off. This is, you know.
Yeah, it was their mission statement of bringing Jurassic Express, resurrecting the group. And I'm glad that we have this kind of maybe a renewed focus on the tag team division again with them, and also with the women's division now. So
hopefully that again. I mean, the men's tag team division has been seeing a bit of an increase anyway, and I think it's been doing really well. So if they can keep that going, that'd be great. So I'm going to combine two. Hold on, make sure I'm. Yeah, I'm going to combine two segments here, and the two segments are related. They are the women's triple threat tag match, and then we'll talk about the bracket, because at this, let's just talk about them all together, right? Makes sense.
Wasn't it four teams, not three? Who four?
Who am I missing?
Is Bane Fours, Sky Blue?
Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. You're right. I apologize. I was putting even though it would have been four wrestlers, I was putting the Sisters of Sin in with Bane and Ford because they had teamed so much together in my head. You're right. I apologize. Which actually goes to my problem with these matches. I don't like multi-person tag matches. Multi-team tag matches. It just always feels weird to me. If they're not tornado style, let me rephrase it. If it's tornado style, go for it, because it makes it. But when they're tags and only two are in at a time, it just always feels disjointed and ugly to me. As to like,
Also, how do they decide which of the teams get to vie to pick their first round opponent? If there's like what, two or however many more teams that weren't involved with this match, you had, you know, Mina and Tony weren't involved with this. TJ wasn't involved with this. I'm just trying to figure out how they selected these four teams to be able to have the advantage.
No, I agree. The whole thing, I never really liked, like, it doesn't matter who's in it. Well, I don't like multi-person traditional, multi-team traditional tag matches. They always just feel so disjointed.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, like, the
I think I would have liked it if it was more of the, I can't remember what's the match called when you two start and then the one whoever keeps winning stays until they get pinned or beat. Two people start off, whoever loses.
No, I know what you're talking. I'm trying to think of the name.
I'm having a moment. I can't think of that match.
But
I like that style of match.
Pieces is saying a gauntlet, but it's not really a gauntlet.
Yeah, kind of.
It kind of, I guess. It almost sounds like a round robin.
I like the gauntlet match idea for these kind of things instead of putting them all into one casserole.
And to me, if you're putting four teams against each other, it has to be tornado. Because, again, with only two people in at the time, it gets ugly. I did like, there's a couple things I did like. Listen, the Sisters of Sin were a pre-established tag team. Fine. Megan Bain and Penelope Ford have been established, but they're doing a pretty good job of, like, now coordinating them as a team. There were two teams that were not really fully established as tag teams. You had Harley Cameron and Willow Nightingale. They came out wearing matching gear, which I think was huge. Like, I really do. I think that was like a big step of like, hey, we're clearly a team. And again, that's going to get relevant to the bracket in a minute. So I really love that. Hayter and Queen Amanada don't have a whole lot of reasons besides hating Tekla to be a team. So I'm glad that they did their best to show them doing some couple moves. I'm glad that they also gave them a finisher. it's small, but it's like, hey, we are a team. I don't think they're gonna be a team for long, but I didn't love the finisher, and I'll tell you why in a second, but at least it's an attempt to not just make them seem like two randos. The reason I didn't like the finisher, and I think it would get better the more they do it, it just seemed a little slow. Like you had the headbutt into the close. Like I think if that gets pulled off quicker, it'll be awesome. I just think it looked a little like almost like the timing wasn't quite there yet. Because it should be.
Go ahead, Jerry.
I'm just saying it should be headbutt into immediate clothesline. It seemed like headbutt, wait a second, then a clothesline.
I don't know. Maybe it looks weird when they're both holding the person. So maybe the person doesn't need to be held. Maybe it's a headbutt by Amanada and that person stumbles into the clothesline.
That wouldn't be. I'm watching it again just to make sure that like maybe I just wasn't viewing it wrong. And I just feel like as soon as Aminat is hitting her headbutt, Hayter should already be leaving with her clothesline. So it's like a 1-2. But either way, it's not a bad finish, and the fact that a tag team has the finisher is huge. Now the winner of this match was Jamie Hayter and Queen Aminat, so they got to choose their opponent for the first round of the AEW Women's World Tag Team Championship, which, by the way, this match was kind of a spoiler for a good chunk of the team, because if any of these teams got to pick their opponent, that means that they're in the the bracket. So the bracket did come out. Actually, before I get to the bracket, anything else to say about the match? I liked that Aminat and Hayter had a finisher. I liked that they got to do some moves together. Sisters of Sin, I think, have been working well together for a while. Nightingale and Cameron, same thing. There was nothing really to say about this match. I don't like these, again, the style, but I think everyone looked good.
Yeah, it's fine. Let Aminat and Jimmy Hayter win this one, because they're not going to win the titles. I don't love the fact that you're one established tag team that had the most history, and Sky Blue and Julia Hart are made to look the weakest. My one little nitpick, because they're picked to be like the easiest path. You know, that's who Hayter and Aminat picked. So I'm like, I don't love that, but
yeah,
little thing.
All right, so let's go into the bracket, and I have my initial thought was complaint, and then I understood it, and I've kind of backed away from it. And I can explain my complaint. You have Aminat and Hayter versus the Sisters of Sin. Perfectly logical. They have the feud. You then have Willow and Harley versus Mercedes Moné and Athena. That gets made later on, but it's too hard to, like, I wanted to talk about this, so we're going to talk about it. But Mercedes and after Moné gets humiliated with a cake, Athena comes up to her and, like, convinces her to be their tag partner, and that works. And I'm glad Athena's back. You then have Alex Winza and Riho versus Tony and Mina, which are they're apparently going to be called the Timeless Love Bombs or something like that. And then you have Bane and Ford versus Ty J. Now, my initial complaint was I'm going to count them. I'm sorry. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And a half, 6.5, 7, 8. Well, those two actually will leave. So I'll say 6.5 people I don't expect to be in their tag team long terms, which is a total of 3.5 teams. And what I mean by, and Bane and Ford is my half, because they are a team, but Bane is clearly like doing her own thing. The teams that I'm saying are Aminat and Hayter. Don't count on them being for long. Moné and Athena, clearly don't expect them to be long. And then Tony and Mina. Don't expect them to be for long. And long term. You might get a couple months out of them, but I don't expect it to be long term. So I was like, what? Meanwhile, you have people like Deanna, who was teaming up with Taya. You have a lot in who have been wrestling down in in ROH. You have some talent you're not using. Why not? You have Thunder Rose is still out there. Why not put them in a team and get to and show them off, so that some of the people that you're not using, that's the point of a tag division, is to the people that aren't being used in singles, you're in a tag and everyone gets built up. So that was my initial complaint. And then I realized something. And I'm sorry I'm talking a lot, but this bothered me the moment I heard it. This is your inaugural tag championship tournament. This is going to be the first people to win the belts. And my prediction is, by the way, is Willow and Harley. But these are your first people to win the belts. And I'll get to my prediction in a second. But you need to have your biggest names in this tournament. Everyone but your champ is in it, which I'm glad they didn't put the champ in it. But every, like your TBS, your ROH, your former champ who just lost, a former ROH who just lost, one of your other form, like all your biggest other names are in there. And I think the reason is to instantly establish that these are a big deal. Like if you win these you've beaten the like, it's not a bunch of teams that have, because they don't have an established tag division, you were always going to have teams that felt thrown together. So instead of being like, we have thrown together teams of people we haven't been featuring, here's all our featured. So now you know what's important. My thought is, once it's won by my prediction of Willow and Harley, you're going to see those other teams fall to the side. Sisters of Sin will still exist. Ty J will still exist. You might then have Deonna and Taya come up. You might have a couple others. But now we've already established how important this tournament is because you had your biggest names in it. You might, maybe I'm wrong on Will and Harley, and they give it to someone like Tony and Mina just for that initial first, like, holy crap. The reason I'm saying Will and Harley is, yes, the matching gear. They had Harley stand up to Mercedes tonight, which obviously plays into the first round, but like I think the conglomeration is clearly getting a little bit more of a thing. Again, I think that you're going to be a fun tag team that gets a lot of people to love them. They would be fun first champs. If it's not them, it's Tony and Mina. What are your thoughts on the bracket and all that? I talked a lot.
So I get why wanting some of the other tag teams and other wrestlers in it would be really great, but to your point, having the teams that you have in there right now, those are the ones they've had storylines built around for the last couple months, whether it's, you know, Amanada and Hayer and Triangle of Madness, whatever, or, you know, Mercedes and Harley, their little thing. So they have all these side stories already built into it, so I understand why you're using those teams. That way, after the tournament, you can go back and play off those stories some more. I think it's going to be Mercedes and Athena versus Tony and Mina in the final. And I see Tony and Mina winning. But okay, I think you're going to have Mercedes be in the final, just to your point, to give it that name recognition, since it is the inaugural tag team championship, right? And we know Mercedes' history with tag team women's championships.
Yeah. So it could be, you know, that could, I don't want it to be Mercedes and Athena personally, but
do you want to see Mercedes go through minion training? I want to see a vignette of her doing training with like Billy Starks.
Here's the thing. There's no way in hell she would, I want her to see her run, not train to be a minion, but train the boot camp. So like Big G pointed out, Athena should have teamed with Billy Starks. Logically, yes. But again, they're going for the big boost of like, we have our biggest names in this to show how important these titles are. The thought is down the road, then you start doing the teams that aren't single stars who are just now thrown together. That's when you start to have like Ty J is not going to win, but they're going to be a team down the road that in theory you're going to see. I'm hoping Deonna, that's where her and Taya come back. There's truthfully Athena and Billy. If Athena loses ROH, they don't have a spot for her yet in a singles title. Let them come and win the tag. Like there's a bunch of stuff you can like. That's the purpose of a tag division, is for that. But right now, in my opinion, is there's just like, here's everyone that you're currently seeing on your TV a whole lot. I mean, that's why I think Windsor and Rio are in it. They were just featured on TV in a few matches. Here's everyone you've seen just featured on your TV. So you know this tournament matters. That these aren't just some scrub titles. And I'm not saying those wrestlers not featured are scrubs. I'm saying like that's the perception I think they're trying to put out there. I prefer it. I don't know. I prefer it if they didn't if they had some, if they had started building up the tag teams in advance of the tournament so that you didn't have to throw in all these single stars to build up the titles, you could have had already established, been like, hey, the tag tournament, like, you, if you've been watching AEW for the last 2 months, you've seen a couple of these tag teams constantly going at it before the belts even existed. And then they could have just been plugged in. You know, you could have had a Deonna and say a Taya feuding with TJ. And all of a sudden you have it built in. Now, Bayne and Ford are there and they are legitimate. I called them a half, but at least they've been together. But I'm just, that's just my humblest of humble opinion. Any other comments on the bracket?
No. I'm just glad we finally announced it after like a month.
Yeah, I was worried that they were letting it drop and I was going to be like, that would be a mistake. And then, all right, so then we'll stick with the women for a second because we're in it. How did Mercedes and Athena team up? Well, you see, there was a celebration of her 12 titles. So in the ring was a cake. And Renee starts to do like, Renee sets it up and then the Mercedes music plays and her 12 guys walk out. But then it's Minnie Monet, which was hilarious that there was a puppet. And Minnie Monet was just talking like she was Mercedes Monet. I mean, there was no like, I'm the mini version. And they start talking and then she does the dance and has Renee do the dance together, which was very funny. Cut to Mercedes music again coming on and Mercedes walking out very pissed off. She sends the guys to the back. She actually kicks Renee out of the ring. She yells at the crowd. I'm loving this from Mercedes. I think there's a lot of really good anger and heat in this that she sold very well. She yells at the crowd. He calls us marks a few times. Fair enough. Then she starts yelling at the puppet. How dare she? And then she does something that, seriously, somebody think of the children. She forces the puppet's face into the cake. Now, people talk about the fish and the fish tank spot, but this is far worse. Now, the whole time I thought Minnie Monet was Chris Statlander, that when she pulled her up, it was going to be Statlander. But turns out when she pulled her up, it was, in fact, Harley Cameron. However, behind Mercedes was Statlander. Statlander comes in, picks her up, and slams her face first into the cake. So Mercedes got a face full of cake. Again, this is just far worse than the spot. Afterwards, Mercedes is in the parking lot. She's very upset about the cake. That's when Athena walks up and is kind of like on her side, and that's how they team up. What did you think?
First of all, that cake had a family. And
yes.
Thinking about that cake's family, so.
Had little cupcakes at home.
Thoughts and prayers.
Are cupcakes a cake's children?
I don't know. Are donut holes donuts children?
Good question. I'm going to have to yes. I've decided yes.
Okay. I always enjoy a good, we're talking about wrestling tropes. I always enjoy a good cake celebration wrestling trope where you know if someone's going into a cake face first. It's always fun watching Mercedes get humiliated because she plays it off so well. And also, how do you clean Minnie Monet? Is that a dry clean or how do you get cake off a puppet?
So now that Kate has a puppet, she's going to have to learn this because I'm sure at some point she'll get cake on her puppet. But I'm assuming it's dry clean. I'm also assuming that's not the original Minnie Monet. I think that was probably a second one knowing they'd ruin it. But yeah, I got to believe dry. I don't even know if it's dry. Like you probably have to like vacuum some. I don't know. Like probably like a steam clean. I legitimately don't know how you clean a puppet. Or if a puppet can be cleaned like that.
So many questions tonight. Yeah.
I know. So we've discovered that donut holes are the children of donuts, which makes cupcakes the children of cakes. It's a whole thing we've learned. Yes, Mercedes, though, is great at playing off like the I've been embarrassed, how dare you spot. It's a real strength of hers. And I also just like the promo she gave before. I thought she Big G saying she wants, she do not put a puppet in the machine. But she's very good. She had a lot of heat in her yelling tonight, and I really appreciated that. So that's our Mercedes thing. Somewhere in all this, because I've skipped around a little bit to keep segments kind of flowing related, we had the Young Bucks outside Tony Khan's office creating a commotion because they wanted another money match because they lost their money match this past weekend. And they've lost their money in the casinos. Renee rolls up and they say they'll wrestle with anyone and against anyone. I wonder why that's relevant. So Tony Khan comes out of his office finally and says he'll put up money for them to fight Jurassic Express and Jet Speed. Uh-oh. 4-on-2? No. For $400,000. 4-on-2? No. They will team with FTR, which I like that it wasn't just like, oh, we're all bad guys now, so we're friends. It was like, no, we have a lot of bad history, so there's going to be a lot of distrust. I think it was $1. Stokely handed Nick Jackson $1, which I do appreciate that he put in his pocket as he walked away. And they're clearly going to have a match on Collision. So what do you think about this short segment?
I'm wondering how long we're going to keep doing this. I'm waiting for them, for the Bucks, just to be poor and accept it and then gain friendship in the loss. It's such a fun little ride for now, but I think it's going to get pretty tiring if we keep doing this over and over again. And I don't know why Tony keeps agreeing to put up money for the Bucks to win or lose. And also,
yeah, it hurts that money probably is so little to him that it doesn't matter.
And why would you have seen it to Tony?
That's a good question. That maybe they, there's some hints there, but I like the angle. I like what they're doing with the Bucks. It will run itself short if they drag it, run itself to the ground if they drag it out too long. Clearly, they're hinting towards a face turn, but that could always be like a double switch of like you think it's going to be a face turn and then they just go further into heelism. We'll find out. I am with you. They're going to have to do it sooner rather than later because you do run the risk of running this down, but so far so good. And that's gonna be a fun four-man. I prefer four-man over four teams. Hold on, I went all out of order. John Moxley had some comments that I'm not even going to get in. I don't think they were really worth talking about. They're basic John Moxley comments. But then we have John Moxley versus Kyle O'Reilly. Kyle comes out to the new conglomeration entrance. I'm assuming this was a solo match. I was going to be like, I'm assuming in solo they get their own entrance, but I kind of like that they didn't. I love the sitcom entrance for the conglomeration. I think it's very fun. They're the only real face group out there. So like they need something. This was Did I miss the match? Oh no, I didn't. I'm out of order. I have the note written out. This was a hard hitting match. I don't think there's anyone's gonna surprise that this was Kyle O'Reilly delivering his elbows and his kicks and Moxley delivering his elbows and his kicks and some false finishes and a couple times you're like, are they going to let Kyle O'Reilly get the big win because maybe they're going to, I'm giving you my thoughts that I thought Kyle O'Reilly might win only because they're going to give Mox that like surprise loss after just having a loss. Kyle O'Reilly does technically get the win, but not the way that would have, because Moxley hits Paul Turner, the ref, with an elbow strike. So then not all the refs come, which again, I kind of isn't how I saw it, but it is a nice Moxley losing his mind moment because he wasn't doing that when he was champ or anything. Like he wasn't assaulting the refs. Like this was a different thing. We have the Death Riders hit the ring, but then the Conglomeration hits the ring. Moxley and Shafir leave. What do you think of the match and the way it ended?
It was, for the up until that point, it was really maybe my favorite match of the night because I liked how they worked together. And I liked the story they were telling with Mox about him trying to, you know, be skittish around any of the submission holds. And, excuse me, I liked the technical aspects they brought to the match. I liked the fact that they switched and started doing more strikes. I'm okay with the DQ because I wanted Moxley to lose this match. I wanted him to have back-to-back losses. And I think him losing by an intentional DQ after I quit further helps this story and where he's at as far as him slowly falling apart a little bit and maybe not being the leader that he thinks he is. So, yeah, I like that part.
Yeah, because there does seem to be a little bit of the Mox falls apart, maybe Death Riders fall apart story going on. As Pisa says, Moxley getting old yellered by Claudio. Was this match announced, the Death Riders versus the Conglomeration, or was it just in response to it?
It was announced.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Death Riders, Claudio, Daniel Garcia, and Wheeler Yuta, which is a stacked team, versus Roderick Strong, Mark Briscoe, and Orange Cassidy, another stacked team. So this was you go after one great match into another great match. Again, when you look at the wrestlers you have in this, you kind of knew it was going to be my complimentary way of saying clusterfuck. Like, everyone just doing insane things and going all over the place. It was one when Mark Briscoe hit the J Driller. That's what I was going to say. When Mark Briscoe hit the J Driller. So the Conglomeration won by pinning Wheeler Yuta. Pac hits the ring immediately after, but Ishii makes the save. There's a whole lot more back and forth. Moxley comes back. He low blows. Orange is trying to fight. But then Darby Allin comes in and kind of clears everything out. So first of all, what'd you think of the 3-on-3? What'd you think of the after? And do you want Darby Allin anywhere near the Conglomeration?
The 3-on-3 was what I thought it would be. I wasn't expecting the Death Riders to win. I thought Conglomeration would win. And also, like the fact that like they're losing after Moxley lost, so you know you kind of have this unraveling where they're losing matches now, and they're not this dominant force anymore. And Darby I don't think he's had to be around the Conglomeration too much. I think he's there to like be backup because the Death Riders are involved. But so I'm not quite sure he's too involved with the Conglomeration yet. If he hangs around them again another week, that'd be weird.
Kind of funny, but weird if he hangs around them.
I think it's just a matter of like, hey, you know, the Death Riders, you know, had numbers, tried to work the numbers and try to take advantage, and Darby came out real fast and helped make a save. And he was not there for the Conglomeration as much as him wanting to take out the Death Riders.
Fair. Kyle Fletcher returns. Kyle Fletcher makes his way to the ring where he is with Don Callis, because why wouldn't he be with Don Callis? And then he starts saying his typical spiel, I guess you'd say. And then Mark Briscoe comes back. And the reason I'm slow is because I try not to show my complaint in this, but I guess I will. He comes out with out comes Mark Briscoe. And it's basically we're setting up Briscoe versus Fletcher again, which I think we've already done. again, this is my biggest point about this episode, is that like they set up a bunch of stuff to be repeated, and I don't love that. What do you think?
Yeah, they've done it like what, almost 4 or 5 times now. So
yeah,
I don't know what you do. I mean, are you gonna let Briscoe win this one finally? And if so, what does that mean for Kyle? Because you've been kind of, you know, put that rocket on Kyle's back and have been putting him at the top as a single star. So I don't know what you do if Mark beats him.
Yeah, Mark's not going to beat him. That's the problem. So, like, it just feels like, why are we doing this again? It wasn't bad the first time. I'm not complaining, but you don't need to do it again. It happened. It's over. Move on. I don't want a bunch of repeats like that. That's never fun. Unless I'm missing anything. After that, we go now to our main event of Bandido versus Okada. I'm right. Is that what we moved on to? Am I missing anything? Yes.
No, I think you're
sorry. Good. I went so out of order on my own notes that, trying to figure out where I'm at. This was an awesome match. Jesus. You get some of those classic Okada drop kicks, Bandido just hitting move after move. There were a couple near falls where I'm like, there's absolutely no way they're letting Bandido win, but dear God, did I bite on it. Okada won to keep his title. And the only reason I knew Bandido wasn't going to win was because it was for the unified title. And I knew they weren't going to let Okada lose it yet. So Okada won. And then after the match, the Don Callis family comes out to the ring to celebrate. And then Takeshita comes out. And I thought that was a very, like, they had their stare down at the end of the match. And I thought that was very interesting. What are your thoughts on the match and that very interesting ending?
Yeah, it was an interesting way to end the show where they weren't even face to face in the ring. It was just Kyle and Don playing peacekeepers. So I'm interested to see what side they pick. I assume Takeshita breaks off, right? But I'm interested to see when we're going to have this payoff between him and Okada.
Yeah, that's clearly coming. So when I did have a moment when the Don Callis family walked out to celebrate where I did really get like NWO late 1997 vibes, where I'm like, just too many of you guys, man. It's just like, what are you all doing? They are going to have to do something about the size of the Don Callis family. They're going to have to do like a Don Callis wolf pack. Oh, hey, JPJ. There's just too many of them.
It's just Scott Norton.
Mark Davis.
Okay, that's fair.
Literally, like, I think they even have a similar... I mean, Norton was just jacked beyond belief. But I think they even have, a similar overall look. But who's Buff Bagwell?
Trent?
Trent's hurt, though.
He's there.
Was he there tonight?
Yeah, he's been around.
He hasn't been around for a while. I didn't realize he was there tonight.
I thought he was there tonight. Unless Rocky can be buff. Rocky has showmanship.
He has a showmanship, but is he buff and does he got the stuff?
I don't know who Lance Archer is in this. And I don't know who the Virgil or the Vincent character would be.
Oh, you're right. Trent was there tonight. That's the first time I've seen him in a while. I went back and looked on the AEW thing. This is tough. There's just too many of them. Yeah, it's just too many of them. They're literally filling the ring. It's like,
no, I agree.
Yeah. I'm blanking. I'm trying to think of who Lance Archer is, the giant, by the way.
Okay.
Clearly tallest one. He fits the giant profile. Kyle Fletcher is, I don't know. The whole thing's falling apart because there's just not a lot of good like comparisons. But I'm looking at just like a ring full of guys. What are we doing? I don't know. But that was our show tonight. What do you think of Dynamite overall?
First hour was kind of slow for me. Second hour redeemed it for me. Yeah. I'm good at like a 2.8 out of 4 funds.
Hold on. I wasn't ready on the fun scale. I didn't realize you were going to use it on me. So that would be an excitable amount close to a lot of fun.
It's a lot of excitable amount.
I'm going to stick to a lot. I think it was a fun night. My complaints mostly revolve around repeating storylines. But the actual events were fun. And this is the problem, Big G. There is no Hall and Nash. Like, that's the problem. They don't have that. They don't have that. They don't have whatever that is. So, yeah, I'll stick with a 3.
I don't know. Hall and Nash, I mean, could it be, like, could it be Takeshita and Okada?
Hall and Nash, I mean, they did shoot somewhat, but not really.
I don't know.
Well, I've already used him as Scott Norton.
No, I'm just saying, like, yeah, if Fletcher's like Hollywood.
Oh, so we're putting Fletcher. No, Okada's Hollywood.
Okay. I don't know.
Okada's older. Rainmaker, yet, like, see, there was no. We're not going to go deep dive into the history of NWO, but if you're going to talk about a flaw of the NWO is they didn't have.
And this is their only flaw, right?
Their only flaw. They didn't have a young guy who was going to step up. I think they wanted Buff to be that, but he just never took that step. Hall and Nash were already well-established. They don't count. So you had Hogan, Hall and Nash. Who was like the Fletcher? Who was the young guy who was going to get made by it? They didn't really have that guy at the time. And they never really made one. So like, but that's beside the point. So, all right, that was our review tonight. Again, we're back. We're going to try to see, well, hopefully maybe next week we'll see. Again, a little shorthanded. So we're tossing this around. Joe, right. When you're not here, well, I mean, We're when you're not here, sometimes I'm not here, but when you're not here, where can you be found?
Oh, you can find me on social media. I'm on there sometimes at _AsianJoe. Right now, you're probably going to be full of random musings, basketball stuff, probably football related stuff. So yeah. And then I do my serial review blog still, although I haven't done one in a while. I feel bad. I feel like I'm slacking because Ryan, you have more here for history content pushed out consistently right now. So you can tell me where I can find that at, because I think it pops into my algorithm a lot.
Oh, good. I'm glad it's filtering into an algae rhythm. You can find me on our socials at Mark Order Pod. Please be cool. And then you can follow my history blog at hereforhistory.com. But I'm also now on, I have a podcast, YouTube Here for History. The podcast is called A Historian Learns About. I do a bunch of different topics that I've learned about. I'm two weeks break, but that had to do with my travel because I was doing some research, history research, but I was doing some research traveling. So it's really hard to make stuff when you're not in front of a computer to record or do anything. But I will have another one next week. I'm going to try to stay consistent with it. So yeah, Here for History on or at _ Here for History, depending on the social you're at. Here for History on YouTube. Be cool. Follow us. Before we go, I will answer Big G's question. I have the Dodgers winning the World Series. Joe, who do you have?
It's going to be the Dodgers. I really want the Mariners to make it. Either way, it's going to be the Dodgers.
Yeah, it's going to be the Dodgers. They're just too stacked. All right. So with that, I'm going to go into my media files, turn up the volume, put in our outro overlay, and click outro.
This concludes the Mark Order Podcast.